From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, those Friday night and the Saturday morning open lines. Plus, we'll talk a little bit about curses. Here's what's happening. Well, now it's official. Congress has halted debate on two contested anti-online privacy bills. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid has delayed a vote on the Project IP Act, we call it PIPA, which was scheduled for Tuesday. And House Judiciary Committee Chairperson Lamar Smith then said his panel would not even consider the Stop Online Privacy Act, SOPA, until a compromise was reached. The decisions follow protests by online encyclopedia Wikipedia and thousands of other websites, which went dark in protest of 24 hours earlier this week. Good news. Scientists who created a more deadly strain of the bird flu have apparently temporarily stopped their research amid fears that it could be used by bioterrorists. In a letter published in Science and Nature, the teams called for an international forum to debate the risks and value of the studies. Now, U.S. authorities last month asked the authors of the research not to put in key details in the forthcoming publications. A government advisory panel suggested that the data could be used by terrorists. Biosecurity experts fear that a mutant form of the virus could spark a pandemic deadlier than the 1918-19 Spanish flu outbreak that killed up to 40 million people. While a company operating a cruise ship that ran aground off of Italy is facing now a class action lawsuit here in the United States, Italy's Consumer Association and two U.S. law firms say they would file the suit against the company on behalf of all the passengers. They want $160,000 for each passenger on the ship. The cruise liner, owned by Carnival Group, has blamed the ship's captain for last week's crash in which 11 people were killed, 21 missing. Regardless of who you blame, the company's also responsible. They hired the captain. If you go up to coasttocoastam.com, take a look at the highlight reel. Take a look at the picture of the man's brain with a nail in it. Doctors in the U.S. have removed a 3-inch nail from a man's brain after he accidentally fired it into his head. Dante Atulo remained conscious after the self-inflicted injury, initially believed that he had only brushed his nail gun against his head. The 32-year-old, who is recovering in the hospital, even continued doing handiwork around his Chicago home for the rest of the day and even chatted to his family. But he was taken to the hospital the following afternoon after waking up from a nap, not feeling well. An X-ray revealed the nail lodged into his brain, but he was still well enough to post an image of the scan on Facebook during an ambulance ride between the hospitals. Dr. Peter Bregan with us, Harvard-trained psychiatrist. Peter, how could someone have a nail in their brain and not know about it?
Well, first, the brain doesn't have any pain fibers inside it. So once the missile's inside, the person's not going to feel pain from it. There'll be pain from the coming through the skull. The pain can develop later if the brain swells and you develop other problems. There's a lot of the brain is what we call silent. And the one clue we have is that this nail was very close to the motor area. If it had hit the motor area, then there would have been symptoms, abnormalities of whatever motor area it hit, the arm, the leg, facial muscles. But the motor area is right behind the frontal lobes. And we've known for more than a century that you can have a fair amount of damage in the frontal lobes without a person realizing it.
What a bizarre story, Peter, isn't it?
Well, you know, there are really even more bizarre stories of this kind. The very first of the stories, George, was back in the 1800s when Phineas Gage was tamping down a powder charge with a 3-foot spike, and it literally blew through his frontal lobe. Injured him horribly, but didn't, as in this case, with a tiny missile, didn't knock him out and didn't destroy him as a person. But what it did do, because the damage was significant to the frontal lobes, it changed him as a person. He became more shallow and less moral.
So his personality changed.
his personality changed. But with this small object, per se, if it lodges in the frontal lobe, at the back of the frontal lobe, very near these motor areas, you could have a tumor in there or other injury, and the person might not perceive it. The problem will be the surgery itself and the healing from the surgery and whether there's swelling of the brain, whether there's inflammation, whether there's bleeding.
And the next day he got sick. He wasn't feeling well, right?
Yeah, and that's probably because his brain was starting to react. Might have been swelling a little bit or some other effect that was causing that. And I understand from another write-up that he was starting to get, some pain in his head the following day. But it's really possible to pass objects like a pencil through the frontal lobes.
But kids don't
a lot of damage.
Kids don't do this at home, right?
Well, first of all, penetrating a skull, which is a terribly risky thing, and you can hit a blood vessel and die from that. You can cause a hemorrhage or a hematoma and die from that. And you can very badly injure the brain, but you may not initially be aware of it if you're in that silent area, especially in the frontal lobes, which this may have been lodged near.
All right. Thank you. Dr. Peter Bregan's website linked up on our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. Take a look at the picture in our highlight reel. You'll see the X-ray of the nail through this guy's head into his brain. In Iran, police have closed down dozens of toy shops. Why? Selling Barbie dolls, because it's part of a decades-long crackdown against what they say manifestations of Western culture. Barbie dolls are sold wearing swimsuits, miniskirts, in a society where women must wear headscarves in public and men and women aren't even allowed to swim together. Neo Shield, that's what it's called. It's a new international project that will assess the threat posed by near-Earth objects and look at the best possible solutions for dealing with a big asteroid or comet on a collision path with our planet. The effort is being led by a German space agency. It will draw on the expertise across Europe, Russia, and the U.S. Soul singer Etta James, best known for the tracks At Last and for I'd Rather Go Blind, has died at the age of 73. It was announced last year that the singer had been diagnosed with leukemia and was undergoing treatment. The star began singing in a group when she was aged 14 before she embarked on a solo career where she signed to the legendary Chess Records label. She went on to win 6 Grammy Awards and was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1993. Etta James did at the age of 73. And a Wisconsin man charged with domestic abuse told police that a ghost was actually responsible for injuries suffered by his wife. The claim by 41-year-old Michael West did not prevent the man's arrest for strangulation, battery, disorderly conduct, and resisting arrest. You know, dragons, are they out there? Are they real? Up next, Mark Pinkham joins us. We'll talk about dragons next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Mark Pinkham is a Templar Knight, a historian, international sacred tour leader as well, the author of a series of books. He's been on the program before many, many years ago. He's also the head of the Universal Dragon Alliance, Knight of the Royal Order of Dragoness, Melusine, and a direct descendant of the European dragon families. Welcome back to Coast, Mark Pinkham. Mark, how are you?
I'm great, George. Great to be back.
What is the dragon families? Who are they?
Well, the dragon families are those that claim to be descended from some legendary dragon of the past. And what gets passed down through their families is special, what they call dragon blood, dragon DNA, and actually spiritual power, spiritual energy. A lot of those dragon families were actually the rulers of Europe, because what comes along with that package is the ability to rule. And from what I understand, so many of the royals in Europe tried to connect their genealogies to some kind of legendary dragon of the past because that gave them more power and more authority to rule. So there's a certain amount of power and prestige and dynamism, you might say, that comes along with being a member of one of these dragon lineages or dragon families.
Mark, David Icke has talked about the lizards and the fact that the royals and other people in power may actually be lizard people. And at the face of it,
I heard that, yeah. George.
Now, I guess, can you tie that into the dragons?
Dragon lore, I hear a lot about that. What my take on that, George, is that if there was such a thing as the Anunnakis, which I believe that there were some extraterrestrial influence in our DNA, they would have been here a long time ago. And their influence in our DNA today would be extremely, extremely minute. So minute that it would be almost imperceptible.
Mark, what is it about these dragons, the myths or otherwise? What did people apparently see?
Well, a dragon, George, is actually energy. And this is why the ancients used to say that this universe was created by a dragon, out of a dragon, out of itself, because this universe was created out of energy. You know, energy travels as a spiral. And so typically they, when they saw the dragon, it moved as a spiral. So they said, okay, you know, this is a serpent, this is a dragon, this is the creator. Now, that's on the highest level, I would say that energy is simply a spiral. But if you come down to lower degrees of energy or more contracted energy, and you can see into those dimensions, this energy actually does take the form of dragons and serpents. It's the most amazing thing. I mean, you can actually see these big, colossal reptile, dinosaur-type beings with these huge wings, where you can see snakes with big wings flying through the air. They do exist.
I was going to say, then, is there some physical manifestation to these dragons as well, then?
Well, you know what the Maya say, and actually a lot of Native Americans, they say that the physical manifestation of these dragons and serpents are physical snakes. And I think you mentioned earlier or a few minutes ago about the Mayan calendar.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at the core of the Mayan calendar is a geometrical configuration that was actually taken from the scales of a living snake. And so basically by studying the geometrical formations on a snake, you can devise a calendar to which you can predict the whole entire universe. So what does this mean? It means that when this energy was initially created, it had a program of unfoldment. The whole unfoldment for eons afterwards, from beginning to end, was encoded in that energy when it was first created.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'd have to say that that's a good case for predestination.
What happened to them? Where are the dragons now?
Well, it depends on who you talk to. A lot of the dragons are still here. And a lot of us have karmic connections with those dragons made in this lifetime or other lifetimes or between lifetimes. And so we can actually see into other dimensions and see those dragons. Or if we can't see them, we can feel them. We can call them. I mean, I think that there's the legend of Merlin calling his dragon. I'm totally convinced that that's a factual legend, that this really did happen. And I can say that because I've seen it myself, and I know a lot of other people that have seen them. They are there. Some Native Americans say that this North American continent was covered with dragons originally, and that the Native Americans were well aware of them and could call them at will. But as soon as the white men showed up, bit by bit, they started to disappear until there's apparently not a whole lot left, but the true shamans, those that work with energy, that work with power, can still summon those dragons. And that's what a dragon is, George. It's energy. And if you're a shaman, that's what you want. You want to draw energy to you and use that energy for healing or for creativity or manifestation purposes.
Mark, in Alton, Illinois, on the cliffs overlooking the Mississippi River, there is a huge painting that Native Americans did hundreds of years ago of what they call the Piesaw bird. And this thing looks like a dragon. It, you know, it's got the huge hooked feet, wings, and, you know, and a head that looks like a dragon. Doesn't look like a bird to me at all. They might have seen something. They call it the Legend of the Piesaw, and it was about a Native American Indian who fought this thing and killed it. But it's an incredible story. Have you heard of that one?
I haven't heard of that one, but it's interesting you would say bird. Because according to the Yazidis, I'm not sure if you're aware of the Yazidis, they're a Kurdish sect living in northern Iraq who claim to be the oldest people on the planet. They were the first one created. And what they say is that the creator of this universe and the creator of their sect was a gigantic peacock. They call him the Peacock Angel. And well, you know, Peacock Angel, and as crazy as it sounds, does exist, and he has been appearing to me for some time. It's I'll be out in nature, and all of a sudden, all the forms of nature become peacock plumes and actual peacocks. And what the Yazidis say is that when the Peacock Angel arrived here, I mean, virtually millions of years ago, the earth was still molten and hot, and a lot of earthquakes everywhere. And he came specifically to give it life, to give it color. And as he came down, he turned into this gigantic peacock, and then he wrapped himself around the earth and covered it with his plumes. This is what they say. And I started seeing his plumes back about 10, 15 years ago when I was studying and practicing shamanism in the Peruvian Andes. And all of a sudden, I would find myself transported into this dimension where it was all peacocks and peacock feathers and peacock eyes.
But why the revival?
Very intimidating.
Why the revival with dragons? Seems like everybody's talking about them now.
Well, that corresponds also partly with the Year of the Dragon that we're starting on Monday. And see, the dragons always show up at the end of every major cycle, because the dragons are the guardians and the protectors of the wisdom related to transformation, death, rebirth, transformation. They are the guardians of this wisdom. In the legends, it always talks about a dragon that's guarding a treasure chest full of gems and precious metals and gold and silver. Well, what that represents is the wisdom, the high wisdom that they guard, and they not only do they show the way of transformation, but they also give you the power to transform and take you to what we call self-realization, the highest consciousness that a human can achieve. So they show up at the end of every cycle in order to shake things up and to transform the people, to transform the land, and ultimately to take people to a place of self-realization. And this corresponds to what they say about the coming 2012 transition into the higher fifth world, that a lot more of us are going to achieve enlightenment. And so the dragons are here to point the way and show us. But they aren't just etheric dragons. They are human dragons, because this knowledge has been passed down lineages of people that call themselves dragons because they're full of dragon force and they have the dragon wisdom.
Do you think the devil might have been a dragon and people got it confused?
Well, exactly. That's exactly what it was. I mean, he came here as pure energy.
Yep.
We can say that he took a form, that he took a human form, but in essence, he was energy. He was a dragon, just like so many of the earliest visitors to Earth. They came as pure energy. They were, in a sense, dragons.
All right, stay with us. Mark Pinkham is our special guest this hour. His website, GnosticTemplars.org. linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. We will come back. We'll take some phone calls with him, talk a little bit about the secret societies of the Templars when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Well, Coast to Coast AM is broadcast live for you 7 nights a week. 7 nights a week. No other talk shows do that in this country. And manning and hosting on Saturday nights, my pleasure. It's John B. Wells. John's guest, by the way, Sterling Allen, Saturday night, talking about new energy technologies. But I haven't had an opportunity to formally bring John in so you could meet him beyond the shows he's been doing for us for some time. John, welcome to the family, my friend.
Captain, my captain, it's such a pleasure to talk to you. A regular dream come true, and I'm not kidding in the least.
At least we're not on a cruise liner ship, huh?
Yeah, well, that's for sure. Inverted at this point, I'm afraid.
Lots of people, John, have been sending me emails since we brought you aboard officially. And they were sending me emails even before that, just telling me how much they love you and enjoy what you do. You've got an incredible background. Tell us a little bit about it.
It all started off with rock and roll, George, like it did for many of us. And it morphed into full-time voiceovers, and then began to spread out just by quirks of fate and those pathways that are unexpected but are laid out for you. It wound up going to Europe and South Africa and everything on Earth. I just feel very blessed to have been able to have this many varied projects, from music, radio, and now to be able to be a part of your crew on this program, which I was such a huge fan of for so many years, is just almost, I have to keep earplugs in so my brains don't run out, you know?
We've had our eyes on you and ears for years, John, so it's fun to have you as part of the team here, and there's going to be much more work for you ahead, believe me.
It'll be an interesting year as we head up toward the end of 2012, don't you think?
Absolutely. And you're an aviator too, right?
I am. I play around with a single-engine propeller plane and on occasion go upside down in an old Russian jet, but they're no computer tricks, very simple, so it's you can play Top Gun and survive it without actually having to do any real combat like the real flyboys do.
What has been the scariest thing for you up in a plane? There was an incredible story we had last week, for example. People are going from a British Airlines flight. They're going from London to Miami, 3 o'clock in the morning, halfway over the ocean. An alarm comes on and says, "We're crashing, we're crashing, we're crashing," with a recorded voice. It was a mistake.
Oh,
and these
no.
poor people went crazy. But have you ever had a tense time on a plane?
Only when I was in the left seat. And that would have been, I like to say, if you'll excuse me invoking the deity, I like to say that the Lord I get all the credit for the Lord's good airplane flying and motorcycle riding. But I think the scariest one was coming into an airport a couple of years ago with some very, very high winds, tantamount to the Santa Anas that you get in California.
Yeah.
And a 50-degree crosswind, 50-mile-an-hour crosswind from a 60-degree angle. So you're coming to the runway almost sideways.
Oh, jeez.
And somehow the nose wheel wound up on the stripe, and when the tower came back on, he told me to his voice was quavering, told me to go ahead and taxi to parking, said, "Well done, sir." And I told my companion, I said, "I just got a well done, sir, from the tower. I suspect we were in deeper trouble than we thought."
Thank God you're done. Well, anyways, we look forward to your show tomorrow. And again, welcome aboard, John.
Thank you so much, George.
John B. Wells, Saturday nights here on Coast to Coast AM. George Knapp will be on this Sunday as well. When we come back, let's take some of your phone calls, talk about dragons and the Knights Templar with Mark Pinkham on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Boy, phone lines are jammed, but we'll get to them in a second with Mark Pinkham. Mark, let's talk just a little bit about the Knights Templar. Do you think they are hiding, because they're still out there somewhere, the Ark of the Covenant? Where is the Ark of the Covenant?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, George.
Yes, it is.
It does appear as though the Knights Templar were involved with the Ark of the Covenant at one point. In fact, it's said that they helped to transport it down to Egypt to the island of Elephanta, and it was there for a while. And then some time later, it was transported again to Ethiopia, where that's where it is today. I can't say that I have a lot of direct personal experience around the Ark of the Covenant, so that's just about as much as I can say about that right now.
Are there practicing Templars right now, Mark?
Well, they're all over the world, yeah.
Yeah.
But are they true Templars? That's debatable. I think the true Templars were the Guardians of the Holy Grail, and in my opinion, the Grail, the true Grail, is this dragon tower I've been talking about that the ancient knights tried to accumulate within themselves, and through that power, they developed certain supernatural powers and abilities, and they achieved Gnostic awareness. But the largest of the Templars today are the what's known as the Templars of the Commandery, they're Freemasons. And they constitute the largest number. And after that, you've got the Sovereign Military Order of the Temple of Jerusalem, which are mostly military and retired military. Now, we're really the only ones that I know of, about the only ones, that are focused on reviving the Holy Grail tradition of the original Templars.
Hey, Mark, let's talk a little bit more about the devil. The break hit us when you were getting into some stuff where I had asked you if the devil, the dragon, one of the same, and you said absolutely. Tell us a little bit more about this.
Well, because the devil, of course, is associated with death and destruction and going against the grain and shaking up the patriarchal laws and regulations and so forth, and certainly that's what the dragon is, and this is what the dragon people are all about. They carry that power of death and destruction, but the flip side of that power is it's also the power of transformation, alchemical transformation. It'll basically destroy everything within you that keeps you from knowing your divine nature. So there's two sides to this this argument about the so-called devil. Is he bad or is he good? In the East, they spend all day long bowing down to bloodthirsty Kali and Shiva, the Lord of Destruction, because the yogis know that if it's not for them, they can't achieve self-realization. They can't achieve the goal of enlightenment.
All right, let's go to some of the calls here for us. Eric in San Francisco, welcome to the program. Hi, Eric.
Hey, how you doing? Great show tonight.
Thank you.
I got two quick questions. One about dragons and one about Templars.
Okay, you got him. You got the man.
I hear that this has been all over the net lately. Something about the Templars announcing that Christ has returned. I didn't know if you knew anything about that. Lord Rael or something. And there's another thing about dragons. I heard that the Chinese myth is that in 2012, they're supposed to come out of hibernation. So I was wondering what you knew about either of those two things.
Well, first of all, there's many sects of Templars. And in my sect of the Templars, our belief is that the Christ is within, and the Christ is returning and will be here. And it is here in the body of a lot of us evolving humans right now. So you'd have to tell me which sect of the Templars you're referring to, since there are so many. And in terms of the dragons coming out of their caves, well, you can take that a lot of different ways. The dragon is pure energy, and supposedly at December 21st, 2012, we are going to be receiving a tremendous influx of energy from the cosmos, and that could correspond to what you'd say is dragons coming out of their caves. And it could also represent that the true dragon masters are once again coming into the human population, those great masters that have achieved the dragon wisdom of true enlightenment, that they're coming back as ETs or as us.
Mark, can anybody summon up a dragon?
Well, how successful they're going to be is, of course, their method of doing that and karmic connections they might have with a dragon. There are actually mantras and invocations that you can use. For example, back in Sumeria, the Ashipu priests of Enki, they had special mantras that they
repeat. And in order to invoke the presence and the power of Enki, which then they would try to move through themselves, through their own body, so that they can use that power to create and manifest and transform. So there are ways of doing it. You definitely can. And even those that don't know how to do it or haven't been trained, if they put their mind to it and they keep focusing long and hard enough, I believe they will attract a dragon.
You don't have to be a wizard to do it, do you?
No, you don't.
Next up,
no,
we go.
But you have to be careful, too, because they aren't all friendly.
That's a good point. Let's go to Roanoke, Virginia. Hello, Katrina. First time caller.
Hi.
Hi.
It's very nice to be on the show. I used to live in L.A., and I miss L.A. very much.
Oh, do you? Well, yes, Virginia's a pretty spot, too, isn't it?
It is. Several different things are connecting with me lately, especially with your shows. I've been listening to your show for less than a couple of years now.
All right.
And I've always had a lot of telepathic, for lack of a better word, a lot of sensitivity going on since I was a kid. And being in this area, no disrespect anyway, the Bible Belt, a lot of times I was told that I was, it was a possession or, they're going to put their hands on me. And I felt like I had to get out of this area.
Mm-hmm.
And when I lived in Winston-Salem in the early 80s, like 79, 80, I had an experience where I was on a plane. And it's interesting that your guest is on tonight, Mr. Pinkham, is on and mentioning about the birds. And I had an experience where I got on a plane, a small engine plane with four people, and felt a bad vibe, and so to speak.
Almost to the point where you wanted to get off the plane, I bet.
Well, yes, I did. And I had been reading about telepathy, which takes me back to your show last night with Mr. Sheldrake.
Yeah.
And I was listening to that, and I thought, I had studied this, and I had an uncomfortable feeling, and something came over my back on my shoulders, and it was, the only thing I can remember is it was like a bird of prey. And I knew that it came down like a physical, like a bird of prey on its prey. And I remember turning around and there was nothing there. And I went into a state of shock and could not tap the knee. I couldn't even move or talk. And I remember I used the information I read about the telepathy in the book that I had previously read a few weeks before. And I focused on the back of the pilot's head. Now this is documented, because what happened was I did give this message, and my friend that I was dating at the time looked, he was in the front passenger seat and looked at the pilot, and they looked at each other and nothing was said. And they were taxiing out, the pilot was taxiing out the runway and turned around without a word being said. And I got out of the plane and went back to my apartment. To make a long story short, they had gone back up after they dropped me off, and they picked up Zach Reynolds, who was, R.J. Reynolds of Winston-Salem, his grandson, and they went back up and they crashed.
Oh, I remember that.
Yes,
yeah.
And that was, in the plane, it was investigated.
Oh,
and
my God.
I have never been able to contact people about some of these things that have happened to me throughout my life, and it just goes on and on. And you also had a couple that were on there several months ago that were authors, and one man had said that he had studied, he was going to study, doing research for the Knights Templar, and he had gone to Saudi Arabia, I believe. He had a friend
mm-hmm.
that was one of the security people over there. And his wife talked about, she had done the study with the books on extraterrestrial and was talking with interviews of people and people with situations with the paranormal. And that the djinn, she brought up the djinn. And I had an experience not long after that incident where I picked up on something that was going to happen on this plane. And the people that I'm switching back, because I do have attention deficit, so I do tend to.
Well, that's okay. And I want to bring Mark in, because we only have a few minutes to go here with him, Katrina. Mark, this energy that the so-called dragons are supposed to be associated with, it is either good or bad, as you were saying. They're either good, they can be evil. What manifests it that way? Why is it sometimes good, sometimes it's not?
Well, actually, it's kind of in the experience, of the experiencer, those that call forth the dragons. The dragons
bring with them this power of destruction transformation. And so their ultimate goal is to destroy parts of yourself and lead you to the highest goal of enlightenment. And but along the way, they're going to create, they can create tremendous havoc in a person's life and turn it upside down. So those that don't really understand what's happening can think, well, this is evil. This is terrible. This is unbelievable. What's going on? Why did I invoke this dragon? It's been nothing but hardship. But, you know, according to a lot of us dragon people, we see the bigger picture that what is happening to you is to destroy or destruct or transform those parts of your life that are keeping you from knowing your divine nature. And so far, the dragons that I have attracted myself kind of fit that description. I mean, they will cause havoc, but in the end, what I achieve through their influence in my life is wisdom, what they call the dragon wisdom, new knowledge, new understanding. So I tend to take a fonder look at dragons than other people do, where some believe they're evil just for the sake of evil. I think they're destructive for the sake of transforming us. And I don't think that the dragons are different from the power of God itself, the power to destroy and transform.
Well, look what Hollywood has done. Scares the daylights out of you with dragons.
Well, exactly. Exactly, right. And in the West, we don't like the power of destruction. Patriarchy doesn't like it. Patriarchy doesn't like anarchy. It doesn't like anybody to shake up the apple cart. And so those powers of destruction are labeled as evil. But in the East, where they know that that power of destruction leads to enlightenment, those powers are venerated. They are called forth. They are invoked on a daily basis.
Let's go east of the Rockies. Vaughn is in Austin, Texas. You're up with us on Coast to Coast, Vaughn.
Good morning, George and Mark.
Hi there. Only got about a minute for you, so give it your best shot.
I'd like to know whether there is a connection between the dragon families and the Beast of Garina, who was a great uncle to Queen Elizabeth.
Now, Mark, you would be the only one who could answer that.
The Beast of what? Excuse me?
The Beast of Garina, who was related to Queen Elizabeth.
The Beast of Garina. And, well, I might know the Beast of Garina, but by another name. Most of the dragon lineages, if you follow them to their origins, they, as I said, they end up with dragons. And most of them of the royal lineage are so interconnected through intermarrying. If you follow those lineages back far enough, which I have, they'll take you to Central Asia, Middle Earth, to basically the energy of Lucifer. They'll take you back to an area that's associated with Mount Kailash and the legendary Mount Meru, where Lord Shiva, the Lord of Destruction, sits up there with his trident and coiled in serpents. This is the Lord of Destruction, who is the Eastern Lucifer. So they will, all these lineages eventually will take you back to Lucifer. And so if you're part of that lineage,
not a good thing.
You want to think of Lucifer as a favorable and a beneficent energy rather than a destructive and evil one.
Mark, your book's still available, The Return of the Serpents of Wisdom and Guardians of the Holy Grail?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can get that on my website. And I wanted to mention that, you know, I live in the land of the dragon here in Sedona, and we are going to have a huge gathering here in December 21st, 2012. And I want everyone to come. There's going to be 3 days of rites of transformation and lectures, and what I see is happening is there's going to be a city, an ancient Hopi city that is going to be revived called Palakwapi.
That's exciting. And do me a favor, post all that information up on your website so we can put it on our Twitter feed. We'll be back.